Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday morning. It's June 22nd. 62 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 63 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch back. And welcome officially to summer. That's right. The summer solstice yesterday means we're officially in the time now. And yeah, it's going to feel like it as we go throughout today. Park City, we're looking at lots of sunshine. But heads up, we are expecting some of that smoke and haze from the Iron County Fire to begin to stream across the Wasatch back as we go throughout this afternoon and into the evening hours. So two things that's going to reduce the air quality a good bit across the area, but also should make for some vibrant sunsets this evening. But be aware, look for more smoky, hazy skies as we go throughout the day with that sunshine. High temperatures will climb into the mid-80s in Park City for us today. In the Heber Valley, we'll be looking at those high temperatures climbing into the lower 90s. So definitely feeling like the first full day of summer out there for us. Now, as we go into your Tuesday, well, more of the same. Lots of sunshine, a little bit of haze and smoke in the sky as well. Temperatures climbing into the mid to upper 80s in Park City. We'll be climbing into the low to mid 90s for us in the Heber Valley. Moving throughout your Wednesday, the warming trend continues. How about upper 80s for us in Park City with that hazy sunshine? We should see those high temperatures climbing into the mid 90s in the Heber Valley. So the heat will be on going through the next 3 days here as high pressure really settles in across the area. Now that high pressure begins to slide to the east just a little bit heading into your Thursday. What that will do is bring us a chance, a very minor chance, but a chance nonetheless, of a little bit more moisture streaming our way around that ridge of high pressure. That means as we go into your Thursday, look for mostly sunny to partly sunny skies. Temperatures will climb into the mid-80s for highs in Park City. Highs will be in the low 90s in the Heber Valley, but we may have a isolated pop-up shower or storm or two. That trend may continue into your Friday as well, with highs in the mid to upper 80s in Park City and low 90s in the Heber Valley. And then we've got some cooler air just in time for the weekend. How about highs in the 60s and 70s as we get towards this weekend? Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Jamie Kimball, Utah Olympic Park General Manager. He'll have an update on the UOP construction, the opening of the summer season, and the upcoming Olympic Paralympic Day. Then from the Park City Chamber Bureau, Communications Director Dan Howard in with a monthly lodging update. Later on, Lindsay Marshall and Kristen Martino of Event Yoga with details on Park City's first ever yoga festival. That's happening this week, this Saturday at City Park. Taking a look at some local news, Juneteenth is the United States' second Independence Day. It marks when word of the Emancipation Proclamation reached the enslaved people in Texas. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports Utah has a complicated history of race and religion.
Americans have celebrated Juneteenth as a federal holiday every June 19th since 2021. Although the Emancipation Proclamation went into effect on January 1st, 1863, it was another 2.5 years before news of freedom traveled throughout the South.
It takes the arrival of Union forces in Galveston, Texas on June 19th, 1865, for the enslaved people to have the assurance of freedom or to even be aware that they have been freed.
That's Professor Paul Reeve, a historian and the chair of the University of Utah's Mormon Studies Initiative. He says slavery was part of Utah's story from the time the first Latter-day Saints arrived in 1847. In fact, three enslaved men were sent ahead of the church's president, Brigham Young, and his group to prepare for the pioneers' arrival.
So slavery arrives with the vanguard group of Latter-day Saints in the Salt Lake Valley. There are also forms of indigenous slavery taking place that Latter-day Saints are also drawn into pretty quickly after their arrival.
Reeve estimates dozens of people were enslaved at any given time in the early years of the Utah Territory. In 1852, lawmakers in the territory passed a law granting some rights to enslaved people, but it didn't free anyone. Legally, freedom came sooner to the West than to the Confederacy. Congress passed a law in 1862 banning polygamy and slavery in U.S. territories, but polygamy attracted much more attention in Utah. Reeve says historians have found only a small announcement about the end of slavery buried in the Deseret News.
As historians, it's really difficult to ferret out when do enslaved people learn that they have been freed in Utah Territory. And it's very possible that they may have had to have waited until the end of the Civil War in 1865, the passage of the 13th Amendment in December of 1865, even though the legal end to slavery in Utah would have been June 20th, 1862.
The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has a history of racist policies. Young barred Black members from priesthood and temple privileges, a ban that remained in place until 1978. In 2020, late Church President Russell Nelson called on members to oppose racism and prejudice. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Summer's underway at Utah Olympic Park, and in the studio with details on summer activities as well as the construction timeline of the newly approved amendment to the master plan, I have Utah Olympic Park General Manager Jamie Kimball. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being here. Let's start just, so what activities and attractions do you have open to visitors now?
Summer is in full swing. We opened up Memorial Day weekend. Got most of our attractions going on the jump side of the park, 10 to 5 this year. We actually made a couple of changes to our schedule, and we opened it up to an all-day pass instead of the two sessions that we were doing before. So that seems to be well received this part of the season already. We actually added in a locals discount as well. If you have a Utah ID, bring that up and you get a 10 to 15% discount depending on the day on your gold pass package, so hopefully we can get a few more folks up there from the local area as well. But things are kicking off and moving right along this summer. It's exciting.
All right, so people can stay all day if they want, as opposed to having to...
Okay. Yeah, exactly, and that seems to be what the feedback was from the guests coming up. They really liked that middle part of the day, so wanted to give them that opportunity as well. Bobsled is running as well, so if you can't get there in the winter, come out and see us in the summer on wheels also. And Flying Ace shows into the pool Fridays and Saturday nights, all happening right now. We open up next weekend the track side of the park as well, so we'll have a couple more adventure courses and the airbags open as well, so people get the full experience.
Okay, so anything new this summer?
The schedule was the big change for us. Mm-hmm. Any changes to the activities as well, but we've got a couple exciting activities coming up at the end of the month with our Olympic Day on June 27th.
Okay.
So we do that every year, but it's our way of celebrating the Olympic experience, and that's going to be on June 27th, and we have a all-day packed, not all day, from 3 to 6 p.m. Ahead of the Flying Ace show on that day. We bring up laser biathlon, curling experience, a push track experience. NAC brings out their adaptive bikes as well, and just get a chance for people to come and participate in all those different sports. There's a great passport program where people can come in and grab a passport, and then they check off at all the different activities what they've been up to. And then that actually gets them into the Flying Ace show that evening as a way to finish off. So excited to bring that out and encourage everyone to come up and check it out and have some fun with face painting and trying out the different activities as well.
Sure. So that's free, yeah?
That is free to the public. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Tell me a little bit more about how do you curl on the grass?
Well, we actually set up a surface on that. They have a plastic surface that we can put out, and then the stones have little wheels on them, so you can practice the curling experience there, sliding the stones. We just came off the World Championships in Ogden earlier this year as well, so hopefully some people will be able to connect with that while they're out there. And then Soldier Hollow brings out their laser biathlon as well, so you get the shooting experience. And then Park City Ski and Snowboard will be out as well doing workouts down in the flats, so people can see what it takes to train like an athlete as well.
All right. And do you have any Olympians, Paralympians planning to show up?
We do. We are doing our athlete meet and greet signing again. We've got 10 to 12 athletes coming out for you to be able to go and talk with and get some signatures from Nick Page, Zach Miller, Casey Dawson, Joe Plebeian, Sarah Warren, and the Masuga family all scheduled to be out right now. So some great faces to come and interact with.
All right. Any food or beverages going to be available? Or
we will have our normal offerings out there as well. So you will be able to get some food while you're up there.
Yeah. Now, is this something you guys do every year?
This is something we do every year at all of our venues, and they do it around the world.
Okay. But it's not just during Olympic years.
No, this is every year just to help celebrate the movement. So the Oval down in Kearns actually just did theirs, and so Soldier Hollow will be doing theirs coming up as well.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk just a little bit about, in terms of the summer activities, is there something that tends to be more popular than others?
Yeah, absolutely. The extreme zip line and the alpine slide are still our two anchor activities out there. People love them. Have since they opened up in 2003, I think. But the tubing activity is a close second or third to those. That's still a once-in-a-lifetime experience to be able to tube down the Nordic jump landings.
Okay, so when you have the gold pass, then you can take whatever ride activity you want to do.
Yep, allows you to do them as many times as you want. We still have a single ride ticket. If you don't have time to spend all day up there and you want to just come up and do one activity, you can come check that out as well.
Okay. And then in terms of the athletes training at the park, is that happening during the day then in the pool? Or?
Yeah, throughout the day we have athletes in the pool. We have Nordic athletes over on the ski jumps in the mornings and the evenings, as well as some of our bobsled and skeleton athletes training out on the push track too. So depending on where they are in their training sequence, we've got them out there. Visiting teams as well as Park City Ski and Snowboard Club out there training regularly.
Okay. And do you offer, or is it just through the individual clubs, camps, or programs for young athletes?
That's through the Park City Ski and Snowboard right now. You can sign up with them to come and learn to jump or try out the different activities, or you can sign up with their club. They have a ton of different summer programs based on your schedule, so you can drop in or a 10-punch or a couple-day-a-week program, depending on the level that you're looking for.
Okay, and then the Flying Aces show, is that every weekend? Or
every Friday, Saturday, between now and Labor Day.
Okay.
And that's $25 for a single ticket, or get a four-pack for $80. Backed by popular demand, it is still one of the most exciting shows. I have probably seen 2,000 shows since I've been with the Olympic Park, and it still is exciting every single time I see it. So,
all right. As we know, the park is moving forward with significant construction projects, including a new hotel, athlete and workforce housing. Can you provide us an update on where those projects stand?
Yeah, we're still working through the process on that right now. After the approval, that allowed us to kind of jump back into the permitting and design piece of that. So we're setting the stage for a springtime for major construction to begin at the park on the hotel side of that. We're going to be doing a little bit of utility relocation this fall and prepping, as well as our pool renovation as well. We'll start at the end of the summer as well. So those are kind of the two pregame pieces before we get into the ground in the spring.
Yeah, it seems like we just renovated the pools. What's going to happen to those?
Believe it or not, it's been 10 years since we've done that. Time flies. But with that, when we renovated in 2015, there was definitely some pieces that we didn't do down in the pool basin. So we're going to take advantage of this time to actually go and replaster the whole basin and pull that out and put that back in, since that's going on 30 years old right now. And so we'll take advantage of being able to do that, as well as move the plumbing around to get it out of the way of the hotel construction. So that'll take us a little bit of time in the fall as well. As well as upgrade the bubbler system and the signage and those other parts that are around the park as well. They need a little bit of a facelift.
Okay, so where is that hotel going?
So currently that's set for the northern edge of the pool where the current, we call it the Day Lodge or the Legacy Center, is right now. And that was the last original building from the 1992 build, so a little sentimental seeing that, but that's going to go down and the new hotel is going to come up on top of that.
Okay, so the Day Lodge will be incorporated into the hotel?
Yeah, so the way that's going to work is the hotel will kind of wrap around the pool, and we've created these different viewing areas in and around, or working through that as well. And going to try and move our office space, which is housed in the day lodge right now, out of there temporarily, and then work on a new area for that to come back in.
Okay. So what's the vision, the idea behind adding a hotel to the UOP campus?
You know, it's interesting. As we try to drive forward, it's constantly renewing ourselves and creating these different active and environments as well, and really being able to elevate the experience of both our athletes and the public that come and see it. The hotel provides both an opportunity to provide affordable housing for the athletes and parents and folks that want to come and stay around and train at the pool, as well as event support, but then also supplies a revenue adjustment for us, a revenue benefit from normal folks coming through town, checking out the park, who want to have a very unique experience up there in the mountains.
Yeah, you already have built one building of workforce housing, mm-hmm. athlete stays as well. You're going to do kind of replicate that then?
Yeah, and that's a little bit longer term. That's down the road a few years. So we think it's going to take about 3 years to finish the hotel. And then we'll start to look at some of those further things in our master plan for the athlete housing building and other stuff like that.
Okay, I was just wondering, I mean, are you guys full with the existing building? Is that part of the idea?
It is. And that's, we rotate our employees through there, as well as coaches and athletes are part of that program. And those apartments are completely full with a wait list year round, so.
All right. As you noted, construction will impact the training pools. How so? It sounds like they're getting pretty much a full summer's use out of them this summer.
Yep. We worked with our developer and worked on our construction plan based on when the approval came through to really try to minimize the impact to the pool and push that as late into the fall as we can. It definitely is a little bit challenging going so late, but we think we've worked out a good strategy to where we can get those critical infrastructure pieces done and be back open in the spring for normal training.
Okay, because it would be hard to do pools construction during the winter, yeah?
Yeah, no, it's not ideal. Yeah. You can do it, but it's not great to do. So we're gonna do as much as we can in that shoulder season. Then again, finish it off in the spring before we open and conclude it with the groundbreaking of the hotel in the spring.
Okay, so that can get built. You're talking about the spring of 2028.
The pool maintenance pieces will be done by spring of 27.
Oh, okay.
So that we can get back open. We're still going to have to work around. We don't have our full construction safety plans in place for the spring operationally, but the plan is to have the pool back open as close to normal as we can in the spring.
Okay. And then just talk maybe if you could just a little bit about how these investments, you know, with a hotel that kind of prepares the UOP for the future. And major international competition.
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, our mission is still to continue to provide a very dynamic campus. And as we continue to build towards 2034, it's really making sure that we shore up our foundation right now and then build those pieces towards the games that we need to be able to be prepared and ready to go completely for those. So the hotel is one component of that, but that is just one mechanism in the overall experience of how we continue to be consistent and be prepared for the games in 2034.
Okay, Jamie, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I would just say keep your eyes and ears open. We are adding a couple more community activities this fall. We're gonna bring our fall chairlift rides back, maybe a moonlight ride out there, as well as doing some of potential yoga at the ski jumps may come out this summer, as well as some of our dog social doggy social. We haven't got a great name for it. Dog days of summer, let me just tease it that way, so people can bring their pets out, have a bit of a social engagement at the bottom of the ski jump in the evenings. So those dates will be coming out here as well. So please check out our website and come up and say hi.
All the trails are reopened then? Because I know there
are the trails are reopened. Okay. Yeti is renamed Sasquatch. I know it's still out there, but that is a hike-only trail and a great, great way to get up and see the top of the mountain.
Okay.
As well.
All right. Thanks so much, Jamie.
Thanks, Leslie. Appreciate it.
Jamie Kimball is the general manager of Utah Olympic Park. Runners and walkers can start their 4th of July celebrations on the right foot at Park City Ski and Snowboard's 5K Fun Run KPCW's Sydney Weaver reports the event is one of the team's largest fundraisers every summer.
Park City Ski and Snowboard has hosted the 4th of July 5K Fun Run for 42 years and counting. Cole Sport founder Gary Cole and Phil Thompson started the race, now capped at 1,000 runners each year. Cole Sport co-owner and ski and snowboard alum Adam Cole says the course has followed the same route for four decades.
It's fun that you run downhill mostly, pretty fast. Your legs are moving fast at 8 a.m. and then you turn around and high-five your friends on the way back and get to see the people walking and the kids trying, breathing really hard.
The July 4th race begins near Park City Mountain's first-time parking lot. Runners must register by July 3rd. There is no day of registration. It is $50 for adults and $30 for kids 11 and under. All proceeds benefit Park City Ski and Snowboard's 1,200 winter sport athletes. A link to sign up and more information is available at kpcw.org. Sydney Weaver, KPCW News.
In the studio now with a look at our summer lodging forecast, I have Park City Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau Director of Communications, Dan Howard. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's just start with the latest on the lodging data, and that takes us through the end of May.
Right. Good news for the town, for listeners. We saw 22% year-over-year performance for the town for the month of May. And May is usually iffy, because we need for the snow to be melting in order for people to really feel like they can come. And this year, there wasn't a question. So when you look at year over year May, people knew it was okay to come in May and start recreating, you know, summer-wise. And 22% year over year is an excellent performance for May. We're obviously not done with June, but June is already looking 2% over year over year. And it's important that we, you know, lean into the summer months. We are 2% up for the next 6 months. And it's, I think that people didn't get their mountain fix. A lot of people didn't make it for the winter because they just knew the conditions weren't what they wanted, but they do want to be in the mountains. So we're seeing advanced bookings for the summer that are showing year over year increases, as well as early bookings for next winter already. People are already betting on it. Like, they didn't get what they wanted last winter, so they're going to, you know, jump on those early bookings. And that's great news because we've got some revenue to make up for.
Yeah.
For
so I was going to say that future look at 6 months ahead, that's just based, a lot of it, Christmas.
Yeah.
People want to make sure that they get what they need.
They missed the feeling of being in the mountains last year, and they want to get the reservations on the books. And, you know, we were down 12% year over year for the winter. So we've got some revenue to make up. But there's really excitement about advanced bookings all summer long. You know, if you were even on the street this past weekend and Father's Day, you could feel there were lots of crowds there. We know July 4th is going to be a very big weekend for Park City. And we've got a lot of arts activity coming up all summer long with the Deer Valley Music Festival and Park City Opera and Kimball Arts Festival. There's a lot on the calendar for the summer, and it's going to keep things busy, and we need it because we really didn't get everything we wanted in the winter.
Okay, real quick, with the average daily rate, what's that looking like?
What's really exciting is that even in the winter, the hotel's held. And there's always temptation to drop rate to try and increase occupancy. But this winter, they knew no matter what the rate was, they weren't going to be able to increase occupancy. So they held rate at $900 average daily room rate all, you know, at the winter. And I think that really helped us to keep that gap from getting much wider.
Okay. As you mentioned, lots of upcoming art events. The Chamber has a pretty robust online calendar. People can find out a lot more.
That's right. And, you know, Park City Institute's got summer concert series. There's Mountain Town Music all around. And I mentioned Deer Valley Music Festival, Kimball Arts Festival, Park City Opera. Lots of exciting music and visual art all summer long.
Okay. Something new is that a coalition of county organizations have put together what's being called the Zero Waste Event Resource Guide.
That's right.
What's this about?
Whenever you do an event, it's very important that we as a Chamber of Commerce help those event planners to create zero waste events. If you're going to have sustainable events in the future, you need to have guidelines about how to make transportation and water and trash something that really is manageable and reduces waste. And so we've created a zero waste event resource guide, which just launched in the last couple of weeks. And you can find that at the Chamber of Commerce.
Website again, yeah, or is yeah. it printed?
No, I think it's good to not print it out in the name of waste, but parkcitychamber.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
And talk to us a little bit about how Deer Valley is involved in this.
Well, actually, you know, everyone in town is part of the zero waste goals. And, you know, Deer Valley is actually very conscious about what they can do to be part of it. But a lot of everyone in town has really come together for the zero waste event resource guide. They've just helped us to create something that's sustainable, doable, that people can actually follow.
Okay. Again, people can always reach out to your zero waste, your sustainability director, Morgan Mingle.
Right. And please go online at parkcitychamber.com and learn more about it.
Okay. What can you tell us about the new visitor information center that could possibly go at Kimball Junction?
One of the most important goals for the chamber is getting people out of their cars and having car-free visitation. And when we learned that there are plans to build a very large parking structure at Kimball Junction, that's one of our dreams, is to have people leave their cars sort of at the edge of town and use public transit for the last couple of miles into town. And right now, where our visitor center is located doesn't actually have great accessibility to where that structure is. It's just physically in the wrong corner. And so they're talking with the Chamber of Commerce about some of the spaces that they have at next to and adjacent to the transit center that's being planned. And does that make more sense for us to be able to have visitors drive their cars into the transit center parking structure and visit us, the visitor center, and then we help them to get on the right buses that take them into town? If we were to stay in our current spot, it would be much more difficult for them to walk to that visitor center, walk to the transit center. So we're just in negotiations right now in conversations, but if we didn't talk with them now while they're planning these spaces, we wouldn't have a real opportunity to be taking advantage of the new parking structure. So that's what it's about. It's in the early stages, and we'll remain in the same building that we're in, the current footprint, for a while, because it's going to take a while to get all those spaces built out of the county. But we wanted to be there day one to talk about what those spaces look like.
So this space, you would just lease it as opposed to try and own it?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Well, right now, when you can help build it from scratch, the costs are actually much less than were you to build it later in the process. So we want to talk about, they have a number of spaces for nonprofits that they're planning over there, including the Kimball Arts Center. And also, do you know Kiln? So they're talking about sort of creating a kiln for nonprofits where they would all be able to share space over there. And we're also one of the nonprofits that's talking about, you know, bringing the visitor center there. So there are at least three spaces that they're talking about for nonprofits as part of the development there. And we want to be at the table early.
Yeah. Again, I mean, for people who might not know, Kiln, of course, is kind of an office suite that is leasable. I mean, yeah. I think you can even do it a day at a time.
I think so, with some kind
of membership. Yeah. Okay. Also, wanted to mention the new accessibility program that is launching next month. Tell me about this.
Yes, it's very important to us to send a message to the world that every person is welcome in Park City. And when you send a message about people with disabilities, that the town is actually excited to have you here, we're going to give you resources so you know where you can go. It's the ultimate form of exceptional hospitality, because every single family has a family member that has a form of disability that they want to know what towns are welcoming to them. And so we're excited to be launching we'll talk a lot more about it on July 23rd when we launch it, but we're going to be part of that global movement about accessibility. And I can only tease it right now because the press release is still coming out. But in July 23rd, and so the next time we have a conversation with you here, we can talk more about what it truly entails. But we've been working on this for a year and are very excited to move forward with our accessibility initiatives.
Okay. Dan, anything else you want to mention?
No, I appreciate the chance to share some good news and we're excited for the summer. It's going to be beautiful.
Okay. Dan Howard is the Director of Communications for the Park City Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau. Well, President Trump called for Utah to end mail-in voting on Truth Social last week. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports state lawmakers have already directed researchers to study whether it's reliable.
President Donald Trump criticized Utah's universal vote-by-mail system on Truth Social Thursday, days before the June 23rd primary election. He speculates that states with mail-in ballots, quote, head left, meaning politically left-wing, and that, quote, we should stop Utah from doing this, unquote. Utah Lieutenant Governor Deidre Henderson disputes the president's claims, writing on Threads that 90% of Utah voters return mail-in ballots via the U.S. Postal Service or in a ballot drop box. She continues, quote, a majority of Utahns appear to love both vote-by-mail and the Republican Party. Utah's GOP-led legislature has already decided to put mail-in voting under the microscope in the run-up to November. Earlier this year, lawmakers commissioned a study being led by Justin Jones, the executive director of the Gary Herbert Institute for Public Policy at Utah Valley University.
Is it safe? Is it secure? Is it doing what it's supposed to do?
Jones's team will be comparing Utah with other states, such as Georgia, Tennessee, Colorado, Arizona, and Washington. He's also visited with county elections officials across Utah and watched them count votes. He says that makes him more and more confident in the process. This is not the first time that the Herbert Institute has studied election security, and Jones says there's always room for improvement.
Ultimately, there isn't a perfect system for this, but Utah has a really good system. We're really confident in the process, the procedures, when followed, that Utah has a safe and sound elections process.
Henderson says the mostly rural state of Utah went from having one of the lowest voter participation rates in the country to one of the highest after it implemented mail-in voting. Jones's team has not published any findings yet, but is required to do so before the November general election. That's when Utah may send a Democrat to the U.S. House of Representatives for the first time in 6 years. Utah has a new court-ordered congressional map that created a blue-leaning district in Salt Lake County. The Utah legislature enabled voting by mail in 2012, and all counties had adopted it by 2019. Lawmakers reversed course last year, passing a bill to phase out universal vote by mail. Starting in 2029, voters will need to request a mail-in ballot and won't receive one automatically. Another change is that mail-in ballots must now be in a drop box or arrive at the local clerk's office by 8 p.m. on Election Day to count. That means if a voter mails their ballot on Election Day Tuesday, it may not reach the clerk in time. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, Park City has hosted countless outdoor recreation events. This Saturday, we'll see the city's first yoga festival in the studio. With details, I have Lindsay Marshall, founder of Event Yoga, along with instructor Kristen Martino. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, so Lindsay, maybe you want to start. Just tell us how the idea came about.
Of course, yes. Yeah. So Eventful Yoga is started as I guess I would say a way for bachelorette parties to have yoga at their bachelorette parties here in Park City. And we have had a great time doing that. What we've noticed is we're a big tourism business and we want to get back into the community. So we started last year doing beer yoga with Woodward on Thursdays, every other Thursday. And it was just a great way to have lots of people come out and get to be a part of the community. And I thought, why not try to make this into a weekend of wellness, and we're going to start small with just a Saturday event where we'll have different yoga options starting at 9 a.m. and just a great way to get people to just be together, have wellness, have music, and you know, bring back that really fun community setting for summertime.
Okay, so Kristen, can you give us the details of the event? When, where, how much?
Yes, I'd love to. So when is this Saturday, June 27th? Starting at 9 a.m., I'll be leading the first class. It's a vinyasa yoga class to a live DJ. Her name is Kate Allen. She's coming up from Park City. We'll follow that at 10:30 with a mindful yoga flow led by Erin Malloy. She's also from Park City, but has recently moved to Salt Lake. So she's coming up from Salt Lake. She'll do a 45-minute session, and then that will lead into a Breathe to the Beat session with Adam Millington, also coming up from Salt Lake. He's trained in Breathe to the Beat. And Kate Allen will also accompany that with her live DJ set, but it'll be to their playlists. At 1 p.m., we'll have Layla Ward. She's up here in Park City. She teaches a Qi Kung, so she's very well adept to the ancient practice of Qi Kung. She'll do that from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Then taking over at 2:15 is Amy Karen. She's doing a forest bathing. So she'll grab a group who meets at the park and then take them over to likely the city park trail, the walk, and just do a nice meditative forest bathing. That'll be from 2:15 to 3. At 3:30, we're doing a family yoga session. And if you know family yoga, you know Randy Joe. Randy Joe is like the go-to person for family yoga in Park City. She's been doing it forever, and she is like the most wonderful energy for family yoga. That will go till 4:15. At 5:30, our wonderful Lindsay will be leading the yin meditation and sound bath, and that will be accompanied by Mike Plord. Mike Plord will do the acoustic sound to synergize with Lindsay, and that'll lead us all the way to the end of the festival at 7 p.m.
Wow, and it's all happening at City Park?
All is happening at City Park, and that's going to be at the bandstand area. We've reserved the entire area from the pavilion to the bandstand, so we'll have that entire space. People can come to gather and hang out on the side while we have a section roped off for the actual yoga practice. So whether they want to come early, hang out for a little bit, we'll have Prime IV there, the local IV wellness business, to give us some free shots and some informational sessions. That'll be from 9:30 to 12:30. And we welcome businesses. We hope that this grows to a point where we're welcoming in, you know, various local businesses to come either sample, sell, extend their network. This is just a gathering for all local communities. So anyone coming in for a short amount of time, if they want to stay for a longer session, that's perfectly welcome. And at this point, we are still welcoming businesses to connect with us. So if they do want to directly connect, they can contact eventfulyoga at gmail.com or message us on Instagram. We're at eventfulyoga. They can also just connect with us through any direct messages, emails, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So why did you decide, Lindsay, to do it as kind of a per charge for event as opposed to just one overall cost and you can kind of come and go?
Of course, yeah. So we actually have a couple of ticketing options for people. We have a drop-in if you want to come to just one specific event. And then there is, you can buy a ticket for two events and then an all-day pass. The family ticketing is actually different, and this is all on Eventbrite. That's our ticketing site. We wanted to make it a different packaging for families because obviously you may have two people, you may have five people. So the family is different, but we didn't want people to have to feel like they have to commit to the whole day. We understand it's summertime. There's so many activities going on. And so even if you can just pop in for Kristen's 9 a.m. session, or come to my 5:30 session, maybe you don't have anything in the afternoon and need some activity for the kids, that 3:30 session will be great. So that's why we decided to do it that way versus just a all-day pass.
Okay, so it sounds like the class is well catered to everybody of all abilities?
Yes, that's truly a big thing, yeah. We, you know, everyone kind of has a sense of what they like when it comes to yoga. So where it says vinyasa, if you're a vinyasa yogi, you're going to love it. But also, Kristen's going to teach a class that's for everybody. So if you've never done vinyasa before, that's going to be a great option for you. And then things like forest bathing, a lot of people may not be aware of what that is or what Layla provides in her Qigong. And so it's a great opportunity to try new things too.
Okay. City Park is the venue. It's nice, the grass. What about inclement weather?
That is a great question. We are doing lots of dances for the weather gods, and we are hoping for the best. So we haven't really made a decision on that yet, but we will keep everyone posted if the weather does decide to not cooperate.
Okay. And as you mentioned, besides the classes, there'll be other wellness activities that you're hoping to build. I mean, I guess the goal is to do this every year and maybe expand it to a 2-3 day event?
Exactly. That is our future goal, and that's why we're definitely encouraging people to come out this year. The more people that come out and kind of give us feedback and be a part of it, it'll only help us grow it further. And Kristen and I really have visions of making this potentially something that even people will be on the national level coming into Park City for. So we definitely want to have the community at the ground level as we start to build this.
Okay. So attendees, what should they bring with them?
Yeah, so there's a post that's going to go out this week on How To Fest. So again, follow us on Eventful Yoga to get all of the updates. Again, when you mentioned inclement weather, we'll have heavy communication on Instagram particularly. It'll also go to Facebook. But anything from a blanket, if you're going for the yin and you just like a little blanket on top of you, that's nice. If you want to bring any additional props like blocks, we definitely encourage you to bring a mat. We are not providing mats, so first and foremost would be the mat, and then anything in addition to that, drinks, snacks. If you want to stay for a couple of sessions and make it like a whole day picnic out, go on to the side, just not interrupting when classes are in session, but you can hang out on the lawn and anything that would just allow your experience to be more fun.
Okay, and Lindsay, I know with your yin yoga, you do a lot of props, but people would need to bring those, or you'll have a class that wouldn't require so many?
Exactly that, yeah. So typically in my yin, if you've been to one of my yin classes, you know I love props, but this yin that I specifically will create will be a propless yin. We will have about 20 or 30 mats. We do really encourage everyone to bring their own mat, but obviously if you're a family of five coming and you don't have mats, we do have some mats there that we will provide. So yes, we encourage, just think about the time of day that you're coming, your comfort level, so extra clothing, blankets, anything like that. The yin session at the end, I'm really excited. We'll be playing the sound bowls, and Mike, who's with Telluride Meltdown, he's going to be doing the acoustic guitar accompaniment. So if you want to bring a blanket and a pillow and just settle into that beautiful, you know, evening air, do remember it is Park City, and so the minute the sun starts to set, it gets chilly. So definitely plan for those type of things. But it's just going to be a really, really fun day. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah. Is pre-registration required, or can people kind of show up before?
Great question. We would love everyone to pre-register if you can. We understand that that's not an option, though. So we will have a couple payment options at the gate. We'll have Venmo, and then we will have some form of cash, although we would prefer to be cashless. So you do have the option to come the day of, but if you can, check out Eventbrite. If you just put in there Yoga Festival Park City, it'll pop up. It's the first thing on there, and so you'll easily find it, or you can always go to eventfulyoga.com, and it's the first thing on the page as well.
Okay, anything else people want to know?
Come out, join us,
yeah,
and have some fun. Just come, have a good time.
Come one, come all. You don't have to be a yogi. I just remember having grown up here, City Park was like the epicenter of all our summer events. And so I really had this vision of bringing some of that back to City Park and bringing some of that old school Park City mentality back. So come, no matter what, we're going to have a great time and we really look forward to it.
And help us grow, get the word out and, you know, share the love.
Okay, and Kristen Martino, Lindsay Marshall, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, upgrades to 2034 Olympic venues could cost Utah more than $50 million. That's according to the State Division of Facilities and Construction Management. The division made a report to lawmakers last week on current Olympic facilities that details current investment and project future needs. Fox 13 News reports that while the Utah 2034 Committee for the Games is raising private funds for the Olympics and Paralympics, some taxpayer funds will be spent on infrastructure. That includes many of the publicly owned facilities and costs for transportation, public safety, and other needs. So far, the legislature has committed some $53 million in grants for venue upgrades. Of that, $46 million has been spent on projects at the Utah Olympic Park and Soldier Hollow. It's also paying for new signage at venues statewide. But CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Colin Hilton, says that may not be enough. Hilton told Fox 13 News that $50 million more could be needed for venue upkeep, although that's less than that was spent on other U.S. game sites. At Lake Placid in New York, for example, $900 million was spent on improvements. Hilton also said improving the facilities is an economic boost to the state. Visitor spending at Olympic sites brings in about $132 every year. The Utah Senate has confirmed two new Utah Supreme Court justices. KUER reports the additions of Jay Jorgensen and Stephen Dent are in response to the legislature's expansion of the court from 5 to 7 seats. Utah Governor Spencer Cox appointed the two men in early June. Dent was confirmed 25-4. Jorgensen 22-7 at last week's special session in the Senate. All Republicans voted to confirm the pair. Some Democrats were opposed, saying neither attorney had been a judge before. Others questioned whether Jorgensen meets the constitutional residency requirements. Jorgensen and Dent will head to the bench within the next month. And Wasatch County victims advocates, every year, Wasatch County's victim advocates help hundreds of crimes victims navigate the legal system. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports the majority of those say they serve have experienced domestic violence.
For victims, reporting a crime to police is just the start of what can be a long and complex journey through the legal system, from interviews and paperwork to charges and sometimes a trial. Victim advocates are tasked with ensuring survivors don't navigate that process alone. In Wasatch County, advocates have supported more than 500 crime victims from July 2025 through June 2026. Over 300 were survivors of domestic violence. Advocate Kristen Guthrie says her office assists victims throughout their court cases, connects them with counseling and other resources, and helps them apply for financial restitution.
We help with all of that to make sure that we try to minimize the financial burden of the victimization itself. I don't think victims should have that on top of the victimization and the trauma.
Guthrie told the Wasatch County Council Wednesday the office recently hired a second part-time victim advocate, Liz Cummings.
She's Spanish-speaking, and I can't tell you how thrilled we are to have a Spanish-speaking victim advocate on board.
Victim advocates accompany their clients to court or share updates from hearings if victims prefer.
They don't always want to go to court because it's scary, quite frankly. They don't want to see that person. And so we're there to provide that buffer between them and the criminal justice system.
In addition to helping domestic violence survivors, advocates also support victims of child abuse, physical or sexual assault, stalking, homicide, and more. As for perpetrators, Utah law requires counties to create plans to reduce the odds they'll reoffend. County Manager Dustin Graybaugh says local leaders, law enforcement, and mental health experts take a holistic approach to provide treatment and education.
We do programs in the jail, treatment programs, work release programs, and other things to try and make sure that we are doing the most we can to reduce recidivism and to address our issues in the county.
To find resources for victims of crime in Wasatch County, visit kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.